that Nicodemus was the ruler of the Jews. He came to Jesus in the night. And we forgot to do the video, didn't we? All right, hang on. We immediately know from these words that he came not wanting anyone to know what he had done. He came secretly and fearfully. And all around the world, darkness is often a metaphor for evil, lostness and uncertainty. But light is a metaphor for hope, direction and certainty. And not surprisingly, Jesus is the master communicator, and he often uses picture words in his teaching around light and darkness. We're going to watch a video that I forgot to watch at the beginning of the sermon. And in the first sermon on the I am sayings that we did last week, we noted that in saying I am, Jesus was claiming the name of Yahweh, which is the God revealed in the Old Testament. And here we add that the Jews thought of the coming Messiah not only as a new King David, but also as God's light coming into the world. So as he begins his ministry, Jesus quotes Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 to 2. The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. The light has dawned. In Luke, there is the story of Simeon, the old prophet, who welcomes the baby Jesus when his parents bring him to the temple by saying, "For my eyes have seen your salvation, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for the glory of the people of Israel." So Jesus is a light to lighten the way for the unbelieving. Twice Jesus says, "I am the light of the world," in John chapter 8, verse 12 and John chapter 9, verse 5, which we read earlier. Because the context of each set of verses we read is different, we can see two applications for this one saying. So we're going to look at both applications today of the I am saying of I am the light of the world. Now in the first reference, Jesus was teaching in the temple on the last day of the Feast of the Tabernacles. Now on the first day of the feast, there's a ceremony called the illumination of the temple. And that involves the lighting of four large candelabras by the priests. And then each person that is present comes and lights their own individual candle. When I looked into that, I thought, oh, it must be like a type of, you know, temple carols by candlelight that we'd have today, where we all light our own candles. And the Jewish writings from the time tell us that these candles produce so much light that it pierced the darkness of the city of Jerusalem, lighting every street and every home. And on the last day of the feast, there were no lit candles. So when Jesus says, "I am the light of the world, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life," the temple was in darkness and the city was in darkness of Jerusalem. Now Jesus is addressing these words to the hostile Jewish leaders who are out to destroy him. Their closed minds he saw as a form of darkness. And John makes it quite clear that from John chapter 7 verse 45, Jesus is not speaking to the crowds or his disciples, but to his bitterest enemies, the Jewish leaders. I'm going to read John chapter 8 verses 13 to 20. Yep. The Pharisees challenged him. "Here you are appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid." And Jesus answered, "Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I came from or where I am going. You judge by human standards, and I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. I am the one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me." Then they asked him, "Where is your Father?" "You do not know me or my Father," Jesus replied. "If you knew me, you would know my Father also." He spoke these words while teaching in the temple courts near the place where the offerings were put. Yet no one seized him because his hour had not yet come. You know, his hearers, when they heard those words, reacted strongly. They said, you're giving false testimony. You're wrong. The law and the temple are God's light in the world, and we are the custodians of that. No, says Jesus, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So what basically Jesus is saying is that it's not in the temple or by keeping the law that you will find light and life, but by following me. And following me means becoming my disciple. And a disciple in the Gospels is one who follows Jesus. You know, in these words, Jesus is anticipating the end of the temple worship and the end of Jewish law. So no wonder the Jewish leaders were a bit upset. Well, more than a bit, they were angry and hostile. What has been really important to them, Jesus announces, has been superseded. Now, have you ever had that happen in your life, where something really is important to you and it gets superseded by someone else? Now, I've got to say, I have had that happen quite a bit as an officer in the Salvation Army. I love the army, don't get me wrong, but it's a hierarchical type structure. So often there are decisions that are made above me that I just have to go with, even whether I agree with them or not. That's just how it works. And I'm going to give you an example of one that's just a really tiny one, and it made me a bit angry, but didn't, you know. Well, I'll give it to you. Our new signs outside. Did you see our new signs when you arrived, Barb and Jim? Well, there are some issues with our signs. Number one, they haven't put the phone number or the web address or any contact details on it. So we're sorting that one out. But one of the things I asked on it was to have Woden Valley. And when it came with Woden. So I, you know, sort of shot off an email to DHQ and said, you know, hang on, it's Woden Valley. We're not Woden Corps, we're Woden Valley Corps. And I was informed that Sydney had decided what goes on the signs as to what area you are in. So Northside Corps, which is over in Gungahlin, have Gungahlin on their sign. We have Woden. You know, that's just a little thing. It's not a huge big deal. But it's, I think it's one of those examples where sometimes people make a decision for you and you're stuck with it. And I think for the Jewish leaders that were angry at Jesus, they were angry because they were hearing that what was so important to them was to be done away with. And that's not an easy thing to hear. But, you know, Jesus is a light to all who believe. Now, the second set of verses we read where Jesus talks about, I am the light of the world, and these words are found in the context of the healing of the man who was born blind. And in this story, blindness and sight are seen not only as a horrible physical disability in a man, but more importantly as a spiritual disability. And that spiritual disability can affect all people that only Dr. Jesus, the great physician, can heal. Now, giving sight to a man who was born blind was actually a true miracle when you think about it. If you think of the science of it, it involved creating new tissue and nerves and blood vessels in his eyes, and giving his brain the ability to be able to interpret the variations in light that were impacting the cortex. And only God can do that kind of miracle, can't he? By putting some spit in some mud and putting it on eyes, all that happened. And really, John's account of that miracle could be a whole sermon on its own. But today we're talking about Jesus talking about the light of the world, so that's what we're going to look at. And the answer is seen in the climax of the story when Jesus calls the man who has been healed to believe in him. Jesus says to him, verse 39, I came into this world so that those who do not see may see. You know, the healed man shows that physical and spiritual healing has taken place when he responds with, I believe. The physical miracle was amazing, but this dark world breaking spiritual blindness is the greater miracle. Sorry, in this dark world, breaking spiritual blindness is the greater miracle. And only the grace of God can give sight to blind eyes. And only the touch of Jesus can lead to faith. I'm going to show you another video that goes for a couple of minutes about a lady called Gail. Got it? I found this actually on the website this week, and I know Gail. When I was at Sela at the rehab, Gail came in as one of the participants. And she'd been to, I think it was to 25 or 26 other rehabs, was finding the light of Jesus in her life. And she's actually gone on to do soldiership classes and is deciding at the moment whether she wants to become a soldier yet or not. She's really involved in Long Jetty Corps up on the central coast of New South Wales. But it was all because she allowed God to touch her heart and to let the light in. So darkness can certainly make us uncertain and fearful. And to say someone is walking in the dark means that they've lost the way. But in contrast, to say that someone is walking in the light means that they know where they are going. They are moving forward with confidence. And light and darkness are powerful symbolic ideas. And Jesus takes these powerful and symbolic terms and uses them to speak of his own ministry. He has come to dispel the darkness and offer light to those who listen to him and follow him. So to all of us here today, I want to say, I am the light of the world. Well, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And maybe for you today, there's some areas of your life where you feel you're walking in darkness. Maybe Jesus needs to shine some light in that area. Maybe you've never had the light of Jesus really in your heart and your life. We're going to sing a song that talks about opening the eyes of our heart so that we can see Jesus. And while we sing this song, I encourage you to move forward for prayer. Even if you don't need Jesus to shine that light in your life and you just want to come and pray with him today, feel free to do that and someone will come and pray with you.